So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review way.
Another power bomb. Power bomb, and that's it. Oh, O'Connor.
I can't believe he just kicked out of that.
And the thunder rolls here. The crowd going crazy. And why not? They are seeing a performance for the ages from the veteran of 16 years. He began his career as Shinya Makabe. He defeated Hiroshi Tanahashi in Tanahashi's debut match. He's worn the gold before, and he wants to do it again. Rabbit clothesline in the corner. Oh, no. I've seen this move before. He's setting him up.
Oh.
A spider release, German suplex. Just listen to the crowd, Josh. An amazing atmosphere at the Bodymaker Coliseum. Gets under two clotheslines.
Goes right to it. Picks Makabe right up. And
oh,
Rainmaker.
He hits it. No one has ever kicked out of the Rainmaker. Is he going to be the first? No. The legend of Kazuchika Okada continues to grow, Josh. An amazing title defense. An amazing performance by that man, Togi Makabe. But in the end, it was Kazuchika Okada maintaining his hold on the IWGP Heavyweight Gold.
It is Review Away. I am John Pollock. I'm joined by Wei Ting. Wei, you got a haircut.
I did.
Looks very nice.
Thanks, man.
Is there a name for that style?
Yeah, it's Shut the Fuck Up.
Whoa! We're gonna start on that foot, are we?
Yeah.
My goodness.
Come on, man.
Just trying to say hello.
We're here to talk about pro wrestling.
Wow.
Hair.
I don't know how many people are excited for this review, eh?
Why is that?
This is a record low amount of feedback we've gotten. I think nobody watched these episodes over the past week, which, you know what? I don't care. I wanted to watch these. This was a selfish choice.
No, this was... Yeah, that's fine.
I don't care. I don't care at all.
I'm guessing these are a little tougher for people to find. Not everybody gets access.
To access.
Yeah.
Yeah, well... Magically, you and I, we just got into a van and we drove to Kansas City and watched these.
What? Oh, because that's where the TV station is?
No. Kansas City just came to mind.
Okay. But whatever.
I don't care.
We don't even have to talk that much about it. We can talk about whatever.
Great job on Monday night for
Thanks,
Review
man.
Raw
yeah,
slash
you too.
Tuesday on television.
You too.
You're really coming into your own.
Oh, am I?
Most people have... Not most, but I've gotten... At least four comments.
About what?
About how much livelier you are on television. You're a natural performer for the cameras, Wei.
Okay.
I feel this is much more subdued, Wei. But when the red light goes on, that's what they call it, Wei. Mm-hmm. Red light fever.
Yeah.
And you are running a temperature on those cameras.
Yeah, no, that was just sort of like a one-time thing. Because, I mean, it was a debut. Now that we've done it. And probably a lot of the curiosity, people who are curious to see it, aren't going to tune in anymore. So I'm just going to go back to this.
Oh. I like both ways.
Yeah? Okay. But, I mean, it really depends on the time of day and what I'm drinking.
I also have a question. Where did you ever get that Bars and Tone sweater of yours?
I got it from a store here. In Toronto. I actually wasn't going to buy it. I just had store credit because I was returning something that I ended up not liking. And I was like, oh, what would I get? Boom.
Bars and Tone sweater.
Yeah.
It works well for you.
Oh, thanks.
The obvious tie-in, but I mean, that's not something I feel I could wear and pull off.
What? How do you pick your clothes, typically?
I go out once a year. I buy a bunch of stuff.
And where do you go? Where do you like to shop?
Oh boy. You know, I do very little shopping now. A lot of the times, my wife will be out and she'll send a picture of something, and I'll say, "Yeah, great, that looks good."
What stores? Like, do you have like?
I don't even know. Like this one, I couldn't even tell you where it came from.
John is wearing, of course, a green plaid,
and you're wearing a white, black, and red plaid shirt.
Yeah. Oh God.
We look identical.
Exactly.
Thank God that you're wearing the shut the fuck up, and I'm bald, so we can decipher.
Do you have like a style icon?
Yeah, way.
Do you have a look?
Do you think I'm emulating anybody? I look pretty bare bones.
I don't know. Do you have a look?
You know what's freaking me out?
What's that?
I'm starting. I noticed some white hairs I'm growing. I'm very worried about this.
Yeah, I mean, I've had white hairs.
See, my dad, his hair went like gray very early, and I worry it's going to pass down to me.
What's wrong with that?
What if I have gray hair in a year?
Actually,
or white hair even. I mean, I don't have the kind of skin complexion that can pull off white hair in a cool way.
Okay.
Like I'm pale.
Right, right.
So
you don't know that. Maybe it'll work for you.
It's not going to be a fashion statement. I think more people are going to take it as a concern of my health.
You're not really like in a job where you need to look young, I don't think.
I think that would be debatable, maybe.
No, I think actually looking old will help you.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Some maturity.
Look as old as possible. Get fat, man. You know? You definitely need to get
You're wasting fat. Your time not being a life coach.
Yeah. You need to get fat. You need to just, like, let go of yourself, man.
Let go.
Just try to look. Smoke. Start smoking. That'll make you...
You're terrible. You're just a terrible human being.
Just get stressed out. Just stress out over things.
I do that pretty well.
Well, stress out even more.
Okay. I'll try. I'll work on it, Way.
Okay. Just like, I don't know what you could do. Just maybe just all of a sudden, you know, do bad things to people and then hope someday it comes back to you.
I don't know where all this is coming from. Did you just watch some horrific television show or movie that has enlisted you with all these horrible suggestions?
I'll tell you what I've been watching, though, over the weekend.
Daredevil?
Yes.
Did you? Fucking love it.
Yeah, how many episodes are you in?
I'm 4 episodes deep.
Okay. Well, I'm 7 in.
7.
Yeah.
By the time actually we're talking right now on Wednesday, I might be done.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, I stumbled upon this on Saturday night, and I just sat there. I love this. I'm not the biggest Marvel guy or anything like this. I love this series.
Well, I mean, I am a huge Marvel guy, and, you know, all the more reason for me to be kind of skeptical. Because, you know, I've seen Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.,
I'm not going in with any baggage.
Yeah, no, it's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think is just it's kind of boring, but I love the movies, and so, you know, but the problem about the Avengers movies is, I mean, they're so high budget, and, you know, anytime you're dealing with superheroes, you need big special effects, you need a lot of money to make it look cool. So I was wondering how Netflix would be able to pull this off, but they really have. And the great thing about it is that it's not a superhero that requires a ton of special effects. These are street-level heroes.
Those are the superheroes I like. The ones that are the superhumans that have that human quality that are the most grounded.
Yeah. And I think that's what's so appealing about this is that, I mean, this is part of I don't know if you know, but part of like a whole deal.
They're doing a bunch of like Marvel series that are going to be eventually intersecting with one another. And that was part of the appeal, like other than everyone raving about this show, is the fact that this is kind of a great jumping on point, and I fully expect that I will follow all of these series unless they completely turn me off.
So they're really like they're taking advantage of the format of the medium and not just, you know, doing a show for the sake of doing a show. I mean, I think the big thing that I didn't anticipate going into it was how violent.
Dude, this is a rough show.
Like
that bowling alley scene?
Yeah. Yeah, it was great.
Oh my God, I'd turn my head.
Wait till you see the some scenes coming up, but yeah.
See, I'm the part I'm at right now is just, and we will not ruin this for anybody, but I've just been introduced to Kingpin.
Cool.
who's great.
He's excellent.
Yes.
And, you know, he's actually not just your stereotypical bad guy. Like, you really get a sense that he believes in what he's doing, or at least, you know, like, he's a fully formed character, even within the first few episodes of seeing him. Not just, you know, I mean, there's no comparison to the Ben Affleck movie at all.
I never even watched it. I saw everybody shit on that movie. I was like, why waste my time?
Yeah, it'd be fun to go back afterwards and to see it. But this is, I think, the show done right, or the character done right.
Yeah, it's great that they kind of, the handcuffs are off when you're on Netflix and you're appealing to your most avid consumer of this. But also, I mean, just the word of mouth alone of this series is making it so huge at this point. And I've loved this series so far.
Do you prefer shows come out like this, or do you prefer the old, you know, weekly format?
No, I love the Netflix model. I love how they come out. It's how I've watched House of Cards. And I think it encourages you. It's almost like this little challenge that here is the challenge in front of you. It is 13 episodes. Get through them as fast as you can. And if it's a great series, you have that option to just binge view it.
How long do a series typically take before new seasons come out? Like House of Cards, for instance. How much time between?
About a year.
Seasons? Okay. And I don't know if that's going to be the case with this, though, because they have new series. I mean, like, I don't know how long it's going to be until you see the next Daredevil season, because they got so many other shows to cycle through.
Yeah, it could be quite a while.
Yeah.
And I don't even know the strategy, if they have a concrete season two, or if it's just do these series as one-offs to introduce the characters, and then we'll kind of mesh the worlds together.
Yeah, I don't know. But, you know, you kind of have to deal with them needing enough time for the series to live. You don't want them to rush it, you know.
Yeah.
Because you can do that with a model like this. But it could also be too long of a wait if you're only interested in Daredevil and not, you know, Jessica Jones or Luke Cage.
Which I imagine are all characters.
I just made them up, actually.
Oh, yeah. No, you didn't.
Yeah.
I never know when you're fucking with me or not. Actually, the first one I know is a series.
Yeah.
Because they've announced that
it's
one.
It's the next one, yeah.
Well, it's a great show. Are you watching any other shows or just that?
Not many other shows.
I thought you got rid of Netflix.
I got it back.
Amazing how that happens.
Yeah.
Well, other than that, anything else fun going on in your life? Any music you're listening to?
No, nothing in particular.
No? No concerts you've gone to lately?
No, not really. No.
You know what happened the other day? I thought of you, actually, when I ordered a pizza recently.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I got my pizza, and it was from Pizza Pizza. And I got the box, and it's like, it looked like it was some friggin' like Gap ad that was on my pizza box. It was like these six obnoxious individuals making stupid faces, and the word epic selfie. That's the cover of the pizza box.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what the fuck is this? And I turn it over.
What is this offensive image on my pizza box?
Well, then I turn it over. It's hashtag share the moment. And I immediately hearken back to you and your disdain of hashtags before it was cool to hate hashtags.
I mean, I actually use hashtags a lot for somebody who claims to hate it.
Ugh.
But I think there's a purpose for hashtags, you know?
Well, this drives me nuts, because this is the latest example of just, it's a fucking pizza company. No one gives a shit about Pizza Pizza beyond feeding me a slice of pizza, okay? And all these companies, if I have to hear one more time how we are, we're not a food brand. We're a lifestyle brand. And that's what this reeked of, is that Pizza Pizza, it's not just a food. It's a lifestyle. No, it's fucking not. Pizza Pizza is not a lifestyle. It's a goddamn meal. I don't feel something and equate it to Pizza Pizza. Just like I don't for Pizza Nova. Just like this fucking pen is not a fucking, it's not a Bic lifestyle. You know what I mean? And I got so annoyed. Hashtag share the moment. So I'm actually going to have a Pizza Pizza inspired thought that is going to engage me to go on my social media device and share with people my pizza loving experience of share the moment. No, I'm going to eat a fucking slice of pizza, and then I'm not going to think about pizza for another month until I'm hungry and want to order something again.
Well, what's funny is that, like, so often you'll see instances of some marketing research company's idea of getting into social media
it's gross.
Simply to put a hashtag in front of some slogan or some word, and they think that's social media. But these days, people who use the internet are fucking smart. Like, people who use it are smarter than people who are devising these stupid strategies. And so what'll often happen is something like that. Yeah, they'll get whatever hashtag share your moment, but it'll be like people taking photos of them having diarrhea, you know, like after eating pizza, and like that shit is funny, okay? But it's just like the WWE, you know, like you really feel like there are a lot of people out of touch with what actually works, and I think there are good ways of, you know, maybe. But it has to be fun. Like, we've seen instances of, like, good social media strategies with hashtags, with whatever, but they have to be creative and they have to be fun.
Well, this was the worst.
Yeah.
Just there's no the effort. Word epic. I hate that word. I hate that word so much. I hated it 5 years ago. This completely took me out of my experience. My pizza experience.
What word would you like to replace epic?
Pizza.
No.
Give me some orange and white and a clock. 30 minutes are free and deliver it to me. I don't attach images to pizza.
But I mean,
I don't attach emotions. I don't attach relationships. I don't think of you and me as a pizza moment. The fucking brand is pizza. We had to name it twice to emphasize we're about pizza.
Right.
For Christ's sake.
What word would you use to replace the word epic if you had to come up with a new one for at least 2015?
Satisfactory.
Epic,
bro. It's epic.
Okay, now try satisfactory.
It's satisfactory. I don't need these stupid words. I don't have a replacement word because I don't want a replacement word. I don't want these people to ever show up on my doorstep again on my pizza having an epic selfie. And all making stupid faces like they're 12.
Yeah. You know what word that's brand new now, the kids are saying, is the word fleek.
What does fleek mean?
You could say it like, oh, this Tim Hortons is on fleek.
Is on fleek?
Yeah, on fleek.
Is that a compliment or an insult?
It's a compliment. I think it means like, man, it's on point. It's like, wow, it's really good.
It's so, on fleek?
Yeah. So this pizza is on fleek. Or whatever. I don't know. I'm probably butchering it. I'm saying it all wrong. Look it up.
We've got it here. The quality of being perfect or on point. I.e. Zayn Malik. That was the guy from One Direction, wasn't it?
Okay.
Zayn is on fleek due to his ability to appear perfect at all times.
There you go.
On fleek.
Yeah. Do you like that one any better?
That's, sure. Sure. Let's, The adjective, hella, on point. Very good. My eyebrows are on fleek. James's personality is on fleek. I already hate it. This word is not on fleek.
No, that's how we'll use to review shows from now on.
Well, I thought that New Japan on Access, was it on fleek?
Was it? It was like, you know, it was approaching fleek. Sure.
What did you think of the commentary this time around?
I mean, I feel like we've said everything we wanted to say about the commentary. This time around...
I wasn't as enamored with Josh Barnett on these episodes.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely.
I felt that, and maybe this is just looking too deep into it based on the knowledge that they did all these shows in 4 days, but it felt like Morrow was... Yeah, I thought he was fantastic on these as well. And Barnett, I think he was just reaching a certain point where working in a lot of cheesy jokes and stuff that did not reflect the product and more so did not play off Morrow very well.
Right. There are certainly points where you felt like he was kind of maybe doing the commentary or doing the play-by-play. He shines, I mean, much like a lot of commentators, I think he shines at describing the technical aspects of a lot of the moves, trying to come up with the psychology behind the submissions and whatnot.
He but really
sounded smooth.
He shines in those big singles matches that you have time, that are a real, you can really break down. Like, some of these matches were edited down, there were multiple person matches, and those are the ones where you're kind of skimming everything, and Josh doesn't really have a chance to sink his teeth into. Not all that unlike Taz, who I feel when there's a big championship match, such as they did recently with Kurt Angle and Bobby Lashley, Taz can be very effective in those big matches. Great. And then there's other ones where I feel it's just simply doesn't, they go off. They go off down the path and they lose me.
Yeah. Yeah. Agree.
So let's get into these episodes. We reviewed episode 4 and 5 from the recent season, which is just wrapped up on Access TV, and season 2 will be coming back next month. But this was episode 4, which aired on February the 6th of this year and featured matches from the June 22nd, 2013 card from Osaka at the Bodymaker Coliseum, which has unfortunately gone through a sponsor change and is no longer called the Bodymaker Coliseum, which is a real unfortunate loss.
Bodymaker is a great name.
It's a tremendous name.
What is Bodymaker?
It's a brand of some sort that I'm not aware of. Maybe it's a steroid manufacturer.
Maybe they like make bodies.
That would be awesome.
Like
from scratch.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you hear about the guy who's supposed to get a head transplant?
No.
They're doing that now. Yeah.
I don't even understand how.
Apparently some doctor has come up with a way to transplant heads. And it's very experimental. You'll likely die.
Still don't have a cure for cancer, but we can now transplant heads.
We might have a cure for cancer. Did you see that Vice documentary?
No, I haven't.
Anyway, that's banter for another show. But Bodymaker looks like just some type of active clothing line.
Well, the first matchup was Prince Devitt and Hiroshi Tanahashi.
Yeah. You know what what I find interesting about these Japanese wrestling shows, and this was the same when we did Noah, is how they really feel like the need to tell you exactly where this match was from, the date, exact date of the show, you know, whatever, what was this, July 20-something?
June 22nd, 2013.
There's no lying. Like, if it was North America, they would treat it like it's happening live right now.
Well, but, what did you think of the decision? Because they also would refer to, you know, current champions as during that time period. And
sorry, what do you mean? You talk about the Access production or the original Japanese show?
The Access production. I mean, the commentary would reflect, say they were holding the championship in this time period, they would say the reigning so-and-so champion.
I don't understand that.
I'm saying that they were calling this as if they were calling this on June the 22nd, 2013. They were not giving you any kind of illusion that we are calling old matches.
Yeah, and I prefer that. Actually, this goes back to another story we had doing Noah's. When the first set of doing them, Dan and Moro would call them as if they took place in the past.
Right.
And we just found that very jarring. I mean, first of all, I think they just didn't, that decision was made because they didn't really necessarily want to lie to anybody. You know, they want to make references to today. But at the same time, when you're watching a match, you want to be in the moment and to be able to hear somebody talk about how, you know, this person is no longer such and such champion, whatever, whatever. It kind of takes you out of it.
Yeah. And when you think about it, when you go back and watch anything in pro wrestling, you're always listening to the commentary who were calling it in real time. That's just how your brain works.
Yeah. So
for just about anything, if you're going back and watching a hockey game, if you're going back to watch an MMA fight, it's the commentary from that moment.
Yeah.
So it is jarring. I agree with you.
Yeah. But at the same time, you know, they didn't – certainly like Moro and Josh didn't shy away from making references to, you know, what these guys – like here, Devitt was pretty much called Finn Balor.
This is not Finn Balor, as Moro said right off the gate.
Yeah. And I think that's probably just more of a, you know, a decision that they made because it – at the same time, like we know who we're watching here. You know, we know that this guy was signed to the WWE. We know, you know, a lot of the moves that you see today are references to moves that you can see in the WWE as well. So it's fun. It's just this show is really just like, you know, almost like this commentary is done as if your friends are watching with you, for instance, and your friend happens to be a guy who's really good at calling pro wrestling commentary.
Yeah, I will say, and this is from somebody here that is watching how many hours a week between WWE, TNA, Lucha Underground, New Japan. I mean, I'm watching everything at this moment, and I think that we're past the point now where I think a lot of these promotions that are all trying to gain a foothold, one of the calling cards is differentiating themselves from the WWE and saying, we don't do this, we don't do that. And I think it's time to move past that. And I want to watch these shows in their own world where WWE doesn't exist and we don't have to make references to WWE. And this is pro wrestling. This is not sports entertainment. I feel in the last week alone, yeah, I've heard this on the TNA broadcast, on a Lucha Underground broadcast, on New Japan. I don't want to be told like.
So you prefer the commentary to be not referencing any of that stuff outside of what's on the show?
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, like, listen, I understand when there's something, you know, a fact that ties into something, but I mean, the subtle jabs to me, I think we're past that at this point. And, sure, and I think sometimes sometimes they overestimate how much the viewer is aware of, you know, terms that are banned in WWE or certain philosophies that, you know, someone listening to this show might be aware of, but your casual viewer is just lost. I never want to give anyone a moment where they're confused, mm-hmm, and you lose them. First match here, Prince Devitt and Hiroshi Tanahashi. Tanahashi came out wearing these Kanye West-style glasses with flashing lights on them.
Yeah.
Very nice. The match is condensed here, and they had... This was almost weird to see the old version of the Bullet Club, a much more compact version of the Bullet Club, with Carl Anderson, Tama Tonga, and Bad Luck Fale in the corner of Devitt.
How did they come together? What was the whole concept behind the team?
It was Devitt and Anderson were teaming with one another, and Moro actually gave a backstory of the fact that Devitt referred to himself as the real shooter, and he was teaming with Machine Gun Carl Anderson. And then from there, they incorporated Tonga and Fale, and then just grew from there. And it was in 2013 that you really saw the popularity of the group explode. And then 2014, so many other members joined, and it kind of became the haven for a lot of the foreign talent to where, I mean, when every time you hear the Bullet Club talk, I mean, they all kind of agree that we're kind of at the max in terms of members at this point.
How many members are there right now?
Oh, Jesus. At this point, I mean, you've added Omega, The Bucks, Jeff Jarrett. You have Anderson, Gallows.
Yeah. Would you say that we've approached NWO territory yet, or are we not yet there?
I don't think they're at the point where it's too watered down, but I certainly think they're at their limit. Everyone kind of has their role in the respective divisions, but it is kind of the max period at this point. I think they're eventually going to be telling the story of a Bullet Club member defecting and doing that kind of an idea rather than incorporating anyone more into the group. I think Jeff Jarrett was the end point for people, mm-hmm, who looked at this kind of cool underground group, and Jeff Jarrett didn't really epitomize that to anybody when him and right. Scott D'Amore joined the group, and it suddenly became, okay, you're a foreigner, we're going to put the shirt on you, rather than a rhyme or reason behind it. Mm. But it's not like Jarrett and D'Amore are regulars over there, so not really full-fledged. Anyway, just highlights of this match from the time. This was obviously prior to the G1 that year. There was a high-fly flow to the floor by Tanahashi to Fale and Devitt together. Back in the ring, Devitt went for an inverted Bloody Sunday DDT, got a two count, and then hit a Pele-style kick, missed the double foot stomp off the top, and then there was a Falcon Arrow by Tanahashi who went to the top, Fale got onto the apron, and hits the grenade after grabbing Tanahashi from the top. This allows Devitt to hit the Bloody Sunday and pin Tanahashi, and they featured about 3 to 4 minutes of this match, and this was a very big win for Prince Devitt, who at the time was the junior heavyweight champion. He had just steamrolled through the Best of the Super Juniors tournament that year, where the booking was unique. He was the champion, went into the tournament, won every single match and the tournament, and it was designed to get him ready for matches with Tanahashi, with Okada that we would see, and going into the G1 and kind of elevating him into the heavyweight division with credibility.
Hmm.
Okay. So, quick match here, not, you know, too much you could sink your teeth into.
Well, really, we're just seeing highlights, and that's the unfortunate nature of these, you know, hour-long programs where you really just have to pick one match that you can show at length.
Yeah, and then kind of fill the time with another match in highlight form. My favorite part of these shows have to be Okada and these various interviews. I mean, you'll get the translation in the ring, backstage with the press, but the best ones are him seated. Reflection mode, yeah. With this somber music and his tones.
Yeah, he seems to be the one, you know, who... It's almost like we're looking back at Okada's dreams. This whole thing is like... He's the narrator. Like, this is like the notebook, and he's like the woman or the man.
I trained very hard for that fight, and I prevailed, but only through the help of Ghetto.
He brings up, he's teeing up the match that we are about to watch with Okada defending the IWGP title against Togi Makabe, and brings up their 2012 G1 match where he defeated Makabe, and says he has an image of Makabe being powerful, and that Makabe challenged him at the Dontaku card, which is their annual show in May. And the challenge was made, Okada accepted, and he doubts that Makabe represents quote-unquote real pro wrestling, as Makabe alleges. So here we have a headline main event title match based on one guy saying he's real and Okada calling bullshit on him.
What does he mean he's real? Like he's a shooter?
He's real.
What is that? What is real pro wrestling?
It's up to your interpretation, Wei.
I represent real pro wrestling?
He just says he is real. What his style is, it's real? It's the real shit. And you, Okada, are a fraud carrying around a belt that disgusts me.
Okay.
And I'm going to kill you.
Tell me about, how do you say, Makabe or Makabe?
Makabe.
Makabe. Tell me about him.
Togi Makabe has been in New Japan forever. He was originally, he went by the name of Shinya Makabe, and then underwent the whole change into Togi Makabe. And as they outline in with the announce team, I mean, very much a playoff of Bruiser Brody. I mean, right down to his theme music that he's come out with, using the King Kong knee drop. I mean, he gets the rep as this great brawler, but when he is put in big matches, he's tremendous. I mean, he can build matches as well as anybody. I've always been a big fan of his, and I think when he's been put in those positions to headline a show, he generally delivers. And on the older side of his career as well, and he's still like pumping out these kinds of matches. Very hard-hitting style. Has had numerous injuries over the past couple of years. Shattered his jaw. I think it was 2 years ago during the G1.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always enjoyed Okada and Makabe's style together. I think they've complemented each other very well. This is when Okada comes out. They kind of talk about his less than successful stint in TNA, and he came back to New Japan with a new attitude, and that has led him to all of his success. Gedo is with Okada, and Tomoaki Honma is in the corner of Makabe. Lots of chants at the start of this match. Very hot crowd. Osaka is one of, if not their best cities, just in terms of crowd reaction, and it's always a big show when they go to Osaka. Ronaldo goes through Makabe's history, defeating Hiroshi Tanahashi in Tanahashi's debut match. He won the G1 in 2009 and a former IWGP champion. Match begins. Makabe ducks a rainmaker very early on. They go back and forth, neither having the advantage. They would fight to the floor. Okada placed Makabe on the top rope and then drop kicks him off the floor, off the top to the floor. What do you think of Okada's drop kick, Wei?
It's very nice, very high.
This is one of the best, I think, in the industry, just the height this guy gets. There was an Irish whip sending Makabe into the barricade, and then took a running boot and then a draping DDT off the barricade to the floor. And Okada then uses this crucifix hold with a chancery applied and applies it to Makabe's jaw. Makabe comes back with a big lariat, and Moro was able to incorporate Stan Hansen here as he's doing this tribute with the lariat, which was Stan Hansen's big move. And Stan Hansen was ringside here as kind of the dignitary overseeing the title match. Okada hit a top rope elbow drop and then made the Rainmaker pose, which typically is the sign like the match is going into the next gear. And the crowd is pretty educated to that the Rainmaker sign is where things escalate in the match and generally always results in the crowd reacting as such. But then Makabe pops up, gets into his face. There's a big forearm exchange. There was a victory roll that got blocked. Makabe hit a bridging German for a two count, then hit a Death Valley driver and a King Kong knee drop, which misses, allowing Okada to apply the red ink and gets to the rope. Big chance for Makabe. Then they went to the floor. Makabe got this wooden table, set it up, and throughout this show and the next one, I mean, the announcers would call attention to the fact that the referees, a lot of leniency here. I mean, disqualifications are kind of non-existent. They do happen, but it's extremely rare. And you could tell there was, like, it's hard to cover for the referees where it's just so, they're so liberal with the rules.
I'd love to know if, like, the Japanese commentary ever points things like that out, but I would assume not if it's so commonplace. I mean, you know, you have to keep in mind that, you know, these commentators and people watching the show are watching from a North American perspective.
Yeah, I mean, to their credit, I mean, they're kind of, if the viewer at home is probably asking that question, I think any time you assume a viewer is asking that question, the announcer should address it as well. So I like the fact they don't just overlook it. They call attention to it. Okada gets powerbombed through the table on the floor, and they're doing the big countout tease as they take a commercial and come back where Okada makes it back to the ring. There's a big powerbomb by Makabe for a near fall. The crowd is going nuts at this point. Okada is placed on the top, and Makabe hits the spider suplex with the crowd just huge into this. Makabe misses another King Kong knee drop, and then Okada comes back with a drop kick to the back of the head, misses a Rainmaker, then goes for a dragon suplex where he gets a two count. Okada then ducks a lariat, hits a tombstone, and this time hits the Rainmaker and gets the win. Crowd was so hot, in particular for the final 5 minutes of this match. Very strong finish. Very good match, I thought.
It's really interesting, like, watching a Japanese crowd because they're, like, so quiet. I'd say the first three quarters of the match. But then when the finish hits, it's like, oh, now we have permission to be loud, to be as loud as we can. And it's
they play just, hard to get, but once you get them,
that's it.
They're all in.
That's it. So this was certainly one of those. A very good match.
Yes, and even the text on the screen, you know, about the 59th IWGP champion making the second defense of his championship.
I love that.
I love how they always detail the number of defenses for all their various champions. I think it adds so much. Like, a title defense is a big deal.
Totally. I mean, I feel like so often you see a championship defense and it's just another match, especially if it's against, you know, an opponent that person's faced before. But if you add to the fact that if you're actually keeping track of the number of defenses, then every match means something.
Yeah, it's one thing where you'll, you know, pretty much once in a generation in the WWE, you'll have a CM Punk-like title reign where the length becomes a really cool story to it. But, I mean, documenting this, that almost becomes a cool little statistic and storyline in and of itself, that here is Seth Rollins and will he be able to get X amount of defenses in comparison to other champions. Mm-hmm. And each title defense, it means something on top of whatever feud is going on, whatever match is going on. It's like this guy is also chasing history at the same time. I think it's so simple and you get a lot of benefit out of it.
Yeah, I guess you do get to the point where, do you keep track of the house show wins, for instance?
Well, that's one of the issues, I mean, you do have, and house shows are generally forgotten about.
What about these? What about in Japan?
Well, I mean, house shows, you're not doing title defenses on house shows for them. Smaller events, I mean, it's generally reserved to six-man, so the title defenses are all big show title defense. I mean, there will be big shows where they don't even defend the title.
Right.
So,
how often do they have press conferences, like promoting events?
Promoting events?
Yeah.
I mean, usually you'll see, like, the backstage stuff after all the shows, but in terms of, you know, before the G1, they'll always do the big press conference, and they'll get all the guys in suits for a big photo
right.
op.
I was looking for photos for this, for just the cover art for this podcast, and I saw that they had a press conference for even Devitt and Okada. Was that at another show, or was that prior to this show?
I'm not sure.
Right.
I'm not sure. Some of the press conferences, I remember there was one, might have been before the G1, maybe 2 years ago, and someone did subtitle them. Yeah. And they're hilarious to watch. I mean, the guys will just, like, take shots at one another, and it's, in particular, Minoru Suzuki, whenever he's involved with them. I mean, he's got just such a great character, where he just There's no bullshit about this guy.
Like, and I wonder, like, in Japan, do people, like, everybody attending those press conferences, for instance, are they all, like, kind of, like, laughing? Or are they just, like, are there people questioning, you know, oh, this is so fake? Or are there people just there appreciating the theater?
I think that, you know, a better question for, you know, WH or Chris that are actually in that kind of environment. But it's generally, I mean, it's looked at as something that has a long history. It's very important in Japan, even to this day. And I think there is a respect level of what professional wrestling is that I would say is not at the same level in the U.S., where you will see people that do take it seriously. But the fringe media, I mean, it's kind of like the circuses in town.
So, you know, how about yourself as a journalist? If you were to interview one of these guys and he spoke in character, would that offend you as much?
These, though, are ones where, I mean, typically, like Okada, for instance. I mean, I don't feel that guy is speaking. You could argue it's his character, but it's almost one and the same. And that goes for a lot of these guys. I mean, they're promoting matches, but it's not like they're playing these goofball characters. Some of them will be.
But they are talking about, you know, fighting really hard and, you know, working really hard to this was a really hard fought match, yada, 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 going for the championship.
Right. I think, though, outside of that, I mean, these wrestlers do, like, Hiroshi Tanahashi has, like, written a book. And, I mean, it's completely open. There's no kind of wink-wink about it at all. So I think in outside of this context, I think they're fairly open from top to bottom. I don't think you'd find too many exceptions of guys who, I mean, the world is aware of what professional wrestling is, even though it is a bit more guarded in Japan.
Have we ever had a Japanese wrestler or a non-English speaking wrestler on the law?
A non-English speaking wrestler
like
on the law?
Like a translated interview on the law.
I don't think so. Maybe something that maybe you could interview someone in Cantonese.
I don't know any Cantonese speaking pro wrestlers that would fit, but
there's got to be some.
I can't think of one in any of the major companies, but
I wish you spoke Japanese. It would be great because your time to sleep is so off that it would correspond with a time to interview someone in Japan. I mean, that's the hardest part is the time zone difference, but it would be perfect for you.
Yeah, I'll get on that, maybe.
So learn that. Yeah, and then we'll get Shibata on the show.
Sure.
And we'll get Toru Yano.
Okay.
And you can interview Kazuchika Okada about everything.
Why don't you just hire a translator?
Do you
think that would work on the radio?
We do have two people that do speak very good Japanese that could do this for us.
That is true. That is true.
Yeah.
But do you think that would work on the radio, a translated interview?
No.
How do they do it in the UFC? Like on those phones?
Like
calls?
A radio interview?
Yeah.
I've never interviewed a fighter that has needed to be translated on the phone. Done them in person, but not on the phone. I think they generally know. For phoners, let's not overthink things. If Henan Barrow isn't going to speak English, let's put him with, you know, media that can speak his native language as opposed to broken telephone, on the literal sense.
Right.
Afterwards, we have Makabe interviewed in the back, saying he will try again, and you can just see the frustration on his face at this loss, and he just lets out, "That bastard Okada! Like, he just can't understand this. He fucking lost." And he says he won't accept Okada until he crushes him. Says he hurt his neck. He is more satisfied than unsatisfied, and the dumb audience must have seen something in him, because after all these years, he's finally brainwashed them. Quite the indictment for this babyface and the audience.
So who is the babyface here?
Makabe.
Okay.
Yes. But, I mean, Okada has very much grown to become, at this point, fast forwarding to the future. I mean, the crowd loves Okada at this point, but he was very much a heel in 2013.
Except
for Makabe is like this, you know, this kind of tough old guy.
Right. Okay, cool.
Hansen presents the title to Okada. Gato speaks briefly and says how Okada is at a different level, but he will not say that Makabe isn't real. He's not going to go that far. He's not going to comment on the realness of Makabe, but will not break any illusions to people, even though he defeated him. Then the Bullet Club comes out, and it leads to Devitt issuing a challenge. And Okada wants Devitt to put his junior heavyweight title up as well, but he knows he can't challenge for that title. But Gato can. So Devitt is going to have to go through Gato in order for Devitt to get a shot at the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. And the crowd is largely chanting in favor of this junior heavyweight matchup with Gato. And at the end, Devitt points his finger at Okada, making a gun signal. And then Okada makes the Rainmaker pose. Very cool visual.
Yeah. I love how, in this scenario, it is the guy who speaks English who is the outsider, and the guy who speaks Japanese, he's the guy who, you know, is the guy that actually makes sense to the audience.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, in you know, anytime you see anything in Western media, it's the foreigner who really feels like the one that's out of place and the one that can't effectively express himself.
Of all the years of pro wrestling in the United States where it's been role reversal and it's been just mocking the Japanese guy who, oh, silly guy, can't speak English. He can't understand me.
Can
you imagine this? Oh, white man, you want to play baseball, hot dogs, beer? Like, how degrading. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
And here it is. It's some justification here
for all. But this wasn't even that much. Like, Okada was just like, I'm going to speak Japanese so whoever this guy can translate for you.
Gato finishes saying that they'll show Devitt what it means to be real.
Ooh.
So we have another battle of realness coming up. And Moro notes the OG Gato.
Mm-hmm.
Moro and Josh love this guy.
Yeah. Well, when did this match actually take place?
Which one?
Junior heavyweight match between Gato and...
It happened in early July. It was 2 weeks before the next show we're going to review.
Gotcha. Okay. So it took place sometime between this show and the next one.
Yeah. Then we finished off the show backstage, Okada saying he is the real pro wrestler, and then we go to Reflection Okada. It's talking about how the table hurt his back, but it had no effect. Found it refreshing to face a junior heavyweight in Prince Devitt, and notes he lost to Makabe in the 2013 G1, but has since beat him twice. And then just kind of concludes about Makabe. He's had enough of him. He's moving on from Togi Makabe. Then we move on to the following week, Episode 5, which aired on February the 13th of this year. And it was based around the Okada-Prince Devitt match. These were matches from the Akita show on July the 20th, 2013 show. It was the final night of their Kizuna Road series, which was leading up to that year's G1, taking place in northern Honshu, which is the largest island in Japan.
Mm-hmm. I love the context of how Moro mentions how this whole road trip, this whole tour basically came about
after the tsunami.
Yeah, as a sort of a developed out of the tsunami as a way to kind of, I don't know, bring cheer.
Yeah, and this was this show at the time did a gate record for this building. They drew over 4,000 people, and New Japan set their gate record in this building. And this was the last show before the G1 would start that year, and that was a phenomenal tournament.
You know, like, I kind of understand that access is sort of handcuffed with what shows that they're given from New Japan, but I feel like if only, you know, Access or another producer had the raw matches, we could have had, like, better built storylines.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they made reference to that Gato-Devitt match. I would have loved to have seen highlights of that instead of, you know, this meaningless six-man that we're about to talk about.
Yeah, it's gotten better. I mean, the last pair we set up, I mean, you had Minoru Suzuki and Okada, where it was set up so great.
What the hell is that?
I don't know.
Okay.
The last episode we reviewed, you had that great setup at the end of the show with Okada and Minoru Suzuki, where you spent 10 minutes building up this match, and that was the match you wanted to see at the end, and you were never going to get that payoff.
Yeah.
At least here, you do get Okada and Prince Devitt, but I understand what you mean. You're setting up matches that you aren't necessarily going to be delivering.
What the fuck is that? Is it our chairs?
No, man. There's someone up there doing something.
It's definitely coming from up there.
Why does it stop when we move?
What the fuck? somebody fucking with us.
I'm nervous to start again.
It's going to start back up.
So I feel that is going to be rectified in season two, where I think it's going to be much more episodic programming.
Do you think so? What's actually going
to
change?
It's pretty much, they're, instead of trying to cover such a long time period, it's basically the Super Juniors tournament, the Dominion show, and the G1. That's all of season two. The large amount of it is going to be the G1. Fuck!
What the fuck is that?
Dude, it's definitely up there. It's 100% up there.
And why does it stop the moment we stop talking?
Quit that racket up there.
You'll leave all this in by mistake.
It just leaves us.
What should we do? Should we keep going?
We'll have to. Yeah. There's a mysterious noise in the studio. We don't know where it's coming from, but you guys will just have to bear with it.
In a nutshell, I think it's going to be better in season two than season one.
Oh, you don't say?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I'll say it many more times probably over the next 10 minutes.
You made that point really quickly.
Dude, I'm going to kill someone. I'm really going to kill somebody.
What the fuck is that?
Fuck. I wonder if it's bleeding through, if people can hear that.
Just turn back in.
Dude, it's not my chair. You can hear it up there.
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe your weight's affecting something.
The ceiling?
It could be. I don't know. Just lean in and like we'll just pretend you're talking.
Like, dude, that's not coming from this chair. You can clearly hear it. Someone's like hammering something. I can't tell if it's below or above us. It's not us making the noise.
Yeah, I know, but we might somehow... There's some trigger somewhere. The weirdest thing. Don't move.
So I think season two will rectify those issues, Way.
Oh, yeah. Very well stated.
Yeah, don't worry about it. All right, the first matchup, it was an 8-man tag, pretty quick here, again, edited down. Carl Anderson, Tama Tonga, El Terrible, and Bad Luck Fale taking on Togi Makabe, Jushin Thunder Liger, Hiroshi Tanahashi, and Captain New Japan, who was referred to as the Japanese Santa Claus.
Okay.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Barnett notes, when the Bullet Club comes out, let's see what they have locked, cocked, and ready to unload tonight. I guess there's an ode to Val Venus.
Well, and also to guns.
Yeah, as another one to guns.
Yeah.
There was a great gun puns later on in the program,
Which
we would get to. Tanahashi and Liger had just won the CMLL tag titles from Tonga and Terrible, which was the example I was referring to earlier about how they were presented on this show by the announced team as the current CMLL Tag Team Champions. Of course, New Japan and CMLL have that working agreement. Terrible also was the current CMLL Heavyweight Champion at this point in time. Moro explains that... we went over this already, why they came to Akita after the tsunami. There was a rolling senton by Liger off the apron to Anderson on the floor. Fale grabs Liger's leg on the top, and then Tonga hits a high drop kick. They all attack Liger. Anderson hits a swivel gun stun to Captain, gets a two count. Terrible, Moro makes this factually abundantly clear that he is only an associate of the Bullet Club. He is not an official card-carrying member of the Bullet Club.
Mm.
So not to confuse. Terrible goes for a slap to Tanahashi, who then ducks and he ends up slapping Tonga. The babyfaces fight off Fale. He's sent to the floor. There's a bridging German by Tanahashi to Terrible and doesn't kick out, but the referee saves this. Might have just been confused on the finish, Terrible. And then there was a scoop slam, high fly flow by Tanahashi to pin Terrible and end the match.
Fun. Looked fun.
Quick, kind of edited 8-man tag.
Yeah. Yeah. As I said, you know, sort of a throwaway.
Okada is then reflecting on the Bullet Club, and he calls them a heel group and talks about the speed of a junior heavyweight compared to himself and says he needs to wrestle this match in his own rhythm. He is not going to fight Devitt's fight. He is going to make Devitt adjust to him like a true champion does. So Okada and Prince Devitt for the IWGP title. Rinaldo and Barnett joke about Devitt's jacket being similar to Chris Jericho's, trying to put their finger on it. What jacket does this seem like? Which was a direct carbon copy ripoff of Jericho's light bright jacket.
But who did Jericho steal it from?
I think Van Halen.
Oh.
I think that's where he first saw it. So everyone steals from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. This is where, of course, Devitt coming off that Best of the Super Juniors tournament win. Devitt is referring to himself as the real shooter, and this is where we get the background of the Bullet Club formation. There is a springboard double foot stomp to Okada delivered by Devitt over the top and then ends up on the floor. Devitt then would take off the turnbuckle pad, a la Toru Yano, and then drives Okada back first into the exposed turnbuckle. The announcers are just having a hard time here, justifying the blatant rule-breaking here in front of Red Shoes, the referee.
And here you have Okada working as a babyface.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, the Bullet Club were the top heels, and angering the crowd with all their blatant breaking of the rules, which was something you wouldn't get, especially in big title matches. Some people at the time were very critical that this is very much Americanized style booking, but at the same time, you got legitimate heat here when they were doing all of this interference and stuff that was new to the New Japan kind of style of booking matches at the time.
Does this happen a lot where they'll do a double heel match or like main event?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily a frequent occurrence. I mean, it will happen every now and then, but I mean, this was very much, you know, where they were clearly behind Okada.
And I was really surprised at how much the crowd was for Okada here, considering the match that I just saw, they were the opposite.
Yeah, well, I think you had, you know, the Bullet Club were really primed as, you know, the main heel faction at this point in time, and the way they had set it up that, you know, the crowd was not going to side with the foreigner here. Devitt would... After that, there was a Rainmaker pose that Devitt makes, mocking Okada, as Gedo then got onto the apron. This leads to the referee being distracted, and Tonga then powerbombs Okada onto the outside of the apron, continuing to work down his back. And there was this great sound exchange as Barnett is justifying the Bullet Club and all of their blatant interference, and Moro just goes off, blaming society for this kind of mindset that is instilled in people and just disgusted with society in general.
Well, apparently he's decided that if by going legit is not going to get him to the top of the food chain, he's going to do whatever it takes.
That's a shortcut. It's the easy way out. It's a testament to our society.
But here he is.
Josh.
Here he is.
Everybody's
an IWGP title shot.
And these horrible traits that we are seeing in people. So a real pause for the cause by Moro Ranallo. Okada starts to fight back. He hits a top rope elbow drop, makes the Rainmaker pose. Devitt ducks it on the first attempt and goes for a sunset flip roll up, only gets a two count. Then there is a Tope Con Hilo from Devitt to the floor. They go back into the ring. He hits the double foot stomp to the back of the head. Huge chance for Okada here. And then Devitt hits the inverted Bloody Sunday DDT for a near fall. Then it's Okada who dives over top to all of the Bullet Club members on the floor, which he'd later explain afterwards when reflecting on the match that he had to show Devitt that he could fly as well, and he could wrestle his style and do it even better than Devitt, which was a nice kind of a callback to why this spot was put in the match and not just a simple, well, I'm going to do a flip now. There was a reason for this in the match. From there, Okada applies the red ink, and Barnett is asked to break it down. And why is the red ink so effective? And he explains that it has to do with Okada not usually using toilet paper in the bathroom.
Ugh.
This was where Barnett was losing me in this big championship match, and we're making toilet jokes. Okada runs into the corner. Devitt throws the referee in front, and the referee gets taken out. Devitt then gets a chair. Moro is disgusted at this blatant disregard of the rules as Devitt got a chair. Okada then takes out Tonga, Anderson, and then Fale goes for the grenade, and Gato comes off the top, gets caught by Fale by the throat, and this allows Okada to drop kick Fale, sending him to the floor. Devitt then reverses a tombstone, and he hits the tombstone, attacks Okada with a chair shot, and then puts the chair onto the chest and hits a double foot stomp off of the top with the chair on Okada's chest. Okada blocks the Bloody Sunday, and then Devitt ducks a Rainmaker, blocks the Bloody Sunday, and it ends with Okada hitting the tombstone, lifts up his body, and hits the Rainmaker, and he pins Devitt at 19 minutes and 14 seconds. Quite a big finishing exchange with a lot of counters and blocking before the tombstone and Rainmaker finish the match.
I really like Devitt's offense. It looks, I mean, really the quintessential Japanese junior heavyweight style. A lot of high flying mixed with a lot of stiff strikes, and I think he does it really well.
Afterwards, Moro notes that the Bullet Club fired blanks in their quest for the IWGP title. Barnett asks if they have any more gun references, and Ronaldo pauses and says he's not going to pull the trigger on that one. Devitt is in the back. He says Okada has beat him, but not killed the real rock and roller, and said they have a rematch scheduled for the opening night of the G1. He will get his revenge in that match, and in fact, Devitt would beat Okada in the opening night of the G1 that year in Hamamatsu. Okada's interviewed in the ring. He says, it seemed like a tough match. What did you think? And Okada said he felt just as usual. He had to face four guys at once, and he thanks Gato for his help, saying that he is on a different level. And he says good luck to anyone bringing him down in the G1. Gato then cuts a promo on how Okada will win the G1 again. He will return as champion. And then Barnett does his Gato impression. Okada and Gato are then backstage, says that fan expectations are just getting higher and higher for him. And he lists Tanahashi, Shinsuke Nakamura, and Togi Makabe as ones that are needing to try harder to beat him. And then they have a Coors Light together. They toast. And then we get a fireside chat with Kazuchika Okada, as he reflects on this huge triumph for him, says Devitt was stronger than he thought, but he didn't have real opponents in the junior heavyweight division. He says he wanted to top Devitt, and that's why he did the Tope Con Hilo, and he could have only won this match with the help of Gato. Really put his manager over as instrumental in this win, and how important he is to Okada's entire presentation, everything about him.
Did they set anything up between these two?
Between who?
Gato and Okada?
What do you mean setting?
Are they still together?
Oh, yeah, they're still together. He's his advocate.
Cool.
There you go. So that was the end of these two episodes. Very strong main events on each show, I thought, with Okada in both of these episodes, with Makabe and then Devitt. And this really did springboard Devitt into that heavyweight mix, where I feel he was accepted at that level, which is not an easy transition that we've seen in the past in New Japan, going from junior heavyweight up to heavyweight. They're usually pretty distinct. And this was kind of the beginning of Devitt kind of transitioning out of New Japan. He'd stick around for about 9 months before leaving for NXT. So two good episodes. I don't think anything at the level of what we saw during episodes 2 and 3. In particular, that, I believe, third episode, which was just fantastic with Okada and Tanahashi from Invasion Attack. But very good shows. And, I mean, the commentary adds so much, as do the subtitles on the promos, and really getting these characters, I think, across more to an outside audience.
The wrestling is totally, I mean, tremendous. Commentary is very good. The style of presentation of a TV show, though, is very different from, you know, most North American presentations here. I have a feeling, you know, like in Japan, they just really want to kind of show these highlights, essentially. Like, you know, here's a recorded document of this event that took place somewhere in Japan on this date. Whereas I think the North American style of presentation is very much more storyline-based. I mean, it's almost presented like a TV drama, you know, where you have a beginning, middle, and end in terms of story. And here, it's just, you're really just kind of presented with bits and pieces. And so, if you're only looking for kind of the matches and the work rate, then I think you'll really enjoy this. But if you're used to, you know, maybe something like a Raw or a North American style of pro wrestling TV, this is definitely different and might be a little lacking.
I give these shows a 7 out of 10. Very strong main events from both shows, I thought. And the season 1 is now completed. They'll be back May 22nd with the start of season 2. And there's some great stuff, in particular from the G1, coming up in their second season. So good to hear that Access is continuing with it. And it seems it's gotten very strong word of mouth in terms of those watching on Access TV. All right. Why don't you tackle the feedback?
Sure.
You're going to read all of it this week.
Okay. All of it? Everything?
Oh, everything.
Where the fuck is it? Oh, jeez. I can't even find it. This thing's buried so deep.
I'll do it. Our feedback comes from Christian Small. Episode 4 highlights one of my only issues I have with these shows, and that's the highlight form of a match. I would have loved to have watched all of Tanahashi Devitt, but I understand they have time constraints, and it's a case of you including the match, as it plays a big part of the post-match with Okada and Makabe in the next episode. I do like how they acknowledge they can't show the whole match and don't play it off as if this was the entire match. I'll end this with a question for you guys. Do you think if he hadn't signed with WWE, that Devitt would have been in the position that AJ Styles is in now, or at least had a run with the IWGP title? I would have to guess yes. I would think that there's a very strong possibility they would have eventually put the IWGP title on him. And I don't know if that would have prevented them from bringing in AJ Styles. I would have to imagine that, like, you just look what AJ's doing in New Japan, that you would have a role for him in some form or fashion, whether it be in the Bullet Club or elsewhere. But yeah, I feel Devitt, all this booking in mid-2013, it was really to take him out of the junior heavyweight division and into the heavyweight mix and be seen as viable. And I do feel he probably would have got a run with the title at some point.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
I think so.
All right. That's all of our feedback, Way. As I said.
Sometimes,
I don't know if very minimal feedback means people are excited to hear us review something that maybe they haven't seen.
They probably just don't know where to find the show.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I like about this show, Way, I like reviewing stuff that sometimes is off the path, stuff that we enjoy watching that for other reasons, sometimes we don't get a chance to see. So, I mean, it's great to do WWE pay-per-views or a Russo era Nitro, but I like doing other stuff as well. So it might not cater to everybody, but I personally want to go back and watch more of these episodes. So
yeah, that's fine.
A selfish choice on our part. But yeah, this week, we are going to the Review Away request thread, which is being run by Brad. It is now color-coded.
What?
It is.
Let's see.
Oh, it's a piece of art. It really is. Let's pull this up. And I want to thank Brad for maintaining this incredible request thread.
How is it actually categorized? How is it separated?
Well, it's essentially by promotion. We have...
Wow.
Look at this.
Look at this thing.
Mixed shows, All Japan Women, AWE. Look at this. So we have it categorized first by promotion, then by year.
And is it alphabetical?
It's in terms of the chronological.
Promotions? The promotions are alphabetical.
The promotions are alphabetical. You are correct.
Wow.
Well, me and Wei put our heads together, and we have decided that we are going to go to a promotion that we don't often review on this show. There have only been a handful of these reviews ever. We are going to review TNA. We are going to go back to lockdown. And we had two options. We could review 2008, which featured that incredible Angle Joe match, had a great build to it. Or we could stick to the thread, and this one was requested by people. We are going to go to the 2007 lockdown, which features not only a six sides of steel cage match in an electrified steel cage for the tag titles, but it also features a certain distinction that we just can't overlook, and that is the worst match of the year, which took place between Chris Harris and James Storm, their infamous six sides of steel blindfold match.
Oh, awesome.
Bro, we are going to take the blindfold match to the next level. They are not going to see it coming because they literally cannot see.
Oh, man.
It's going to be a fun TNA review next week. Lockdown from the Family Arena in St. Charles, Missouri. With the tagline, "Every war ends in the cage." Are you excited, Way, for 2007-era TNA?
Not really.
Well, I'm excited.
Not at all.
Now, for those of you out there saying, oh, what the fuck? You're choosing something I don't have. Well, we did some digging here. If you go on YouTube.com to TNA Wrestling Plus, we are giving them some real estate here, some prime promotion. You can sign up for this little on-demand service they've got and get a free 14-day trial. We are not getting anything out of this. We simply want you to have the ability to watch this show. You can sign up. You get it free for 2 weeks. You can watch this show. If you like it, you can keep it. If not, you don't have to. Make sure you cancel because you will get billed, I feel, afterwards. As I'm looking here at the...
Are you getting billed?
I have not signed up for this yet.
Okay.
But the whole event's up there. All 2 hours, 52 minutes, and 55 seconds of it.
So study up, guys.
TNA Lockdown 2007.
We hope to beat our feedback record for this week.
Of one.
Yeah.
So if two of you watch, it's a win for us.
Yeah.
All right. So that's going to be our review for next week. TNA Lockdown 2007. Mr. Ting, why don't you let people know about the television show that is sweeping the nation? The nations after this past week, because we are in multiple nations.
Multiple nations now. And I believe we're on Roku and all that stuff.
We are on Roku in the States.
Review of Raw every Tuesday. If you're watching on the Fight Network in Canada, we are still on free preview, I think, until the end of this month. So we have maybe like 20 days. 20 days of it. 3 weeks. Enjoy it. And we are on 11 a.m. Tuesdays, as well as our new time of 7 p.m. Tuesdays. That's the repeat.
That goes into effect in 2 weeks.
Oh, in 2 weeks. Never mind. Sorry. 5 o'clock right now. Never mind.
11 and 5 p.m. Eastern time. Just remember those times for now. We'll tell you when the prime time change is coming.
Just set your PVR. Set your PVR.
We're confusing people already. Mm-hmm. Okay, so check out Review of Raw. This past week's show is already up there. YouTube.com/Fight Network is where you can go.
Yep.
Catch all of our great shows. You can catch The Law from Sunday night, featuring a very fun chat with the Honky Tonk Man, as well as a very spirited debate between Jason Agnew and Dan Lavransky over NXT. Ooh. There were fists flying. There was steam coming out of ears. It was a hot debate between these two who were on diametrically opposed views.
Who won?
Tune in and find out, Way. We don't give away answers. We just tease, and then you guys can find out the answer.
That's the next Grapple Kingdom.
Oh, maybe. Maybe.
Dan versus Jay.
By the way, what do you think of Jason Agnew's latest suit that he's purchased?
Very snazzy.
He was recommended this suit by Rockstar Spuds. Spud pointed him in the direction of where to buy this suit.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Wow.
He contacted him, and he was directed to this place of where he could buy a funky suit, and he bought it. And it's the most ridiculous-looking photo I've ever seen of the man.
Yeah, it's incredible. Is he... What does he plan on doing with this?
I have no idea. I don't think it's just to...
Where can people see this suit?
Oh, yeah, I guess he didn't tweet this, did he?
No, he didn't.
Well, there's another tease.
Oh, God.
Maybe now you can envision.
So this whole episode has just been basically what John Pollock knows that nobody else knows. What John Pollock is interested in and has seen that nobody else gives a shit about.
Well, you don't have to put it in such... terms. What are you going to do as soon as we're done this podcast? What's up next?
I'm going to go home and I'm going to nap.
You're going to nap?
Yeah.
Just had your tea, now you're going to go nap?
Yeah.
Wow. Well.
A long evening ahead.
I'm simply going to shut the fuck up, because that's what Way wants me to do. Next week, TNA Lockdown, we're going to be in Montreal doing that review.
Wow.
Are we? No, we're not. You won't. I will.
Yeah, I will not.
So, are you excited about Montreal?
Yeah, I am.
God, I've never been able to translate so well. Fucking end the show. Goodbye, folks.
On this night, the Bullet Club fired blanks in their pursuit of the IWGP Heavyweight Crown as Ghetto celebrates with his main protege.
They had an empty magazine. Do we have any other gun-related... metaphors?
I'm not going to pull the trigger on anything.